InvestorIdeas.com podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of InvestorIdeas.com podcast. In today's podcast, I'll be going over a few public company announcements, Canadian cannabis and Indigenous communities, as well as a new potential source for CBD. In recent news from Aurora Cannabis Incorporated, trading on the NASDAQ and the TSX as ACB, like many Canadian LPs, they have been looking to increase savings after wrapping up a transformation plan that delivered the company at least $400 million in savings over the last 3 years. The company announced on Wednesday with its financial reports that it wants to uncover another $40 million in savings by the end of next March, which marks the end of the company's fiscal year. This incremental reduction puts us squarely on the path to reach our next financial milestone, which is positive free cash flow, Miguel Martin announced on a call with analysts. Now, profitability has been difficult across Canada as cannabis industries have been affected by the lack of demand, strict regulatory and taxation policies, as well as the strength of the illicit market, which has hampered the financial performance of most businesses, including Aurora. Aurora, which has been pursuing sales in several European markets, recently decided to close its Nordic production facility in Denmark and rely on its Canadian facilities to supply the entire market. The Canadian facilities have a lower per unit cost, higher quality, as well as much more reliable supply, said Chief Financial Officer Glenn Ibbett. We believe this change, in addition to reduced costs, will allow us to compete even more effectively in the growing European market, where we already have a substantial leadership position. Across the entire business this fiscal year, he said Aurora was aiming to take away at least $5 million quarterly as less efficient operations are eliminated and at least another $5 million from cost reduction initiatives. He is also expecting the company to save about $2 million per quarter in interest as it pays off the remainder of its convertible debt, which stands at about $80 million. So, Aurora Cannabis, again, they recently announced closing that Denmark facility, so now focusing strictly on exporting from their Canadian facilities to supply the European market. Obviously, if you've been paying attention to the news with the European market, there has been, I would say, not as much movement as people have been anticipating. It still is expanding, but obviously at a much slower pace, and a lot of those pilot programs, you're seeing some of the same unfortunate type of, semi-professional studies coming out that are really trying to hyperinflate cannabis use disorder, as we've seen in the U.S. and Canada as well. That gets talked about in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of debate and skepticism on both sides as far as how reliable a lot of the data sets that have been given so far are and how reliable the information they can say about the risks associated with cannabis use disorder and cannabis are, but that is something that is starting to affect the European market with the one Danish study coming out that hasn't been too favorable for the cannabis industry, at least in the wording of the study. The study itself isn't really anything that's too damning, but again, it's all about how things are presented. In other news for Canadian LPs, a recent article from MJ Biz Daily discussed how Hexo Corporation, trading on the TSX and the NASDAQ as Hexo, reported a total net loss before tax of $129.7 million in the company's third quarter, bringing the accumulated losses since 2016 to more than $2 billion Canadian. Now, Hexo disclosed plunging revenue while reporting its fiscal third quarter on Thursday. In the February to April period, Hexo's net sales were $21.6 million, down by approximately 50% compared to the same period last year. In that same quarter, recreational cannabis sold at retail was 26.5, which was down 46% from last year. Medical sales were 647,000, down 28%, and the international revenue fell 90% compared to last year. The only revenue stream that did not experience a significant year-over-year decline was wholesale transactions, which increased 22%. In a conference call with analysts, Hexo CEO Charlie Bowman blamed soft performance in key markets, including Alberta, Ontario, and Quebec, fierce competition within the industry, as well as SKU rationalization, in which Hexo discontinued some of their poorly performing product offerings. One of the other reasons was that subsidiaries Animus Global filed for bankruptcy protection and was therefore deconsolidated from HEXO's earnings. HEXO, like many Canadian LPs, has not generated positive cash flow or earnings since 2016. And also in the third quarter, HEXO said that it entered into a definitive agreement for Tilray to acquire all of HEXO's outstanding shares. HEXO said its shareholders have approved Tilray's acquisition, but the final arrangement between HEXO and Tilray remains subject to court approval. And obviously, I think that that's still pretty much a done deal, even with some of the negative financials that HEXO has posted. That being said, something to pay attention to, and HEXO really not setting itself that different from many Canadian LPs. Again, if you're just looking at the entirety of the sort of Canadian cannabis market since legalization, basically a lot of the conversations that were started at the very beginning of legalization, which were some of these taxation policies, some of the regulatory policies not making sense, some of the provincial policies being disruptive to their own industry, how all of these would probably allow the illicit market to thrive within the legal framework. These were all discussions that happened pretty much at the inception of legalization in Canada, and they're still the same discussions that are happening today. And realistically, there's a lot of different groups that are trying to lobby to change for different government policies. There's a lot of provincial lobbying. But at the end of the day, the business still is where it is. And a lot of the current things that are negatively impacting the Canadian cannabis market have not been addressed and do not seem likely to be addressed in the meantime. Similarly, in the U.S. markets, to how everyone has discussed how safe banking continues to slow down the industry, how it continues to disrupt the industry and sort of delegitimize what each individual state has accomplished with their legalization policies. And we also don't see really any movement on that front either. Federal decriminalization within the states doesn't seem likely anytime soon. And it's kind of just the same thing over and over again. You are seeing at least some companies adapt properly to these environments, and some of them are doing well. Some of the small to medium-sized companies have done a little bit better. And then some of the big MSOs within the states seem to be at least on a path to profitability, if not outright profitable for a few of them. So I think within the Canadian industry, there's a lot of different things impacting it. One of the other things is in other recent news from Canada, a Senate committee recently commented on how the current cannabis market and legislation have kept Indigenous peoples from sharing in the economic opportunities that the legalization of recreational cannabis has created. The Standing Senate Committee of Indigenous People said Thursday that it wants the country to shift its approach to cannabis to help Indigenous communities and entrepreneurs better benefit from the cannabis market. The committee was left severely disappointed but not surprised to hear that Indigenous peoples found themselves often shut out or facing additional barriers in the cannabis market. Once again, Indigenous peoples have been excluded from participation in the economic prosperity of the country, said Brian Francis, a PEI senator hailing from Lennox Island, First Nation, at a press conference in Ottawa. And once again, little regard has been given to how our lives have been impacted. Now, the committee he sat on found the Indigenous community is difficult in fully taking advantage of cannabis legislation stemmed from legislation around the sale and distribution of cannabis, licensing, and even the regulation and policing of the substance. Many problems that the community faces have identified happened in October 2018 in consultations that were inadequate at best and could and should have been addressed 5 years ago, Francis said. This oversight, to put it charitably as I can, cannot readily be corrected. The cannabis market is now largely saturated, and First Nation entrepreneurs will have to work twice as hard to gain a foothold in this market. Similarly to what I was talking about, again, with just overall cannabis legalization, a lot of the issues that were discussed at the beginning of legalization have still not been addressed. This was one of the things that many people did raise right out of the gate, was how there wasn't much inclusion for First Nations within this legalization. and how they would probably be left out of the industry and would probably find it difficult to compete just because of high licensing fees, because of how each province basically has their own individual agreements with Indigenous communities. So some agreements have been reached in BC, Ontario, and Saskatchewan, but the Indigenous communities told the committee that Quebec and the Northwest Territories have not made similar moves. Legislation has also left few Indigenous communities with the licenses from Health Canada and the Canada Review Agency that are necessary to operate in the cannabis industry. This has been something that's been discussed often in BC. There's a lot of the legal cannabis retailers who actually have been protesting against many of the Indigenous owners who are operating within reservation property in BC, mainly because they're, to some extent, considered part of the illicit market, even though that isn't technically true, but because they're not getting the same licensing through Health Canada, and also are in a different tax structure. They're selling different product than the traditional recreational market. And so because of this, there's basically a competition between the traditional recreational market and the Indigenous recreational market, which obviously isn't good for anyone and is still a negative for the First Nations communities. So as of last September, the committee counted 55 Indigenous affiliated applicants for commercial cannabis licenses, with 12 of those located in First Nations communities. Some 47 Indigenous owned or affiliated businesses have received commercial licenses, including 6 First Nation communities. In general, First Nations communities do not receive a portion of the tax, but the committee would like to actually change that and look at how they could share in the levy. And they would also like to change how the licensing and basically entire business structure is set up for Indigenous communities, for small to medium-sized businesses, so that they could have more access to the industry. In general, there's certainly some work that still has to be done, but I would say this is a golden opportunity for the government to act, said David Arnott, a Saskatchewan senator at the same conference as Francis. We've given them clear recommendations, and if they follow these recommendations, that really will set the stage for a reconciliation, certainly an economic reconciliation. So that would be a great thing to see. Again, there's a lot of different groups, and now we have the Senate pushing for the same type of thing, which is a change of the structure of legalization of licensing fees and taxation within the cannabis industry in Canada. This is something that's been brought up to the government many times since legalization. And hopefully there's enough pressure now from enough different directions that the government will be forced to act upon this. The same thing could be said for safe banking in the U.S. It seems like there's enough interests involved and enough money on the table. Even just looking at the structure of insurance for a lot of these businesses and a lot of the employees of these businesses in the U.S., it just makes logical sense to allow this. But again, for certain things, it seems like no matter how much pressure is placed upon the government for cannabis-related issues, there doesn't seem to be a lot of wiggle room or a lot of movement in any meaningful direction. Hopefully, though, in Canada, we could see some of this, as, again, it is affecting the recreational industry as well, as companies like Ahexo and Aurora Cannabis are obviously displaying. And lastly, in the world of CBD news, a recent news article discussed how scientists have apparently discovered CBD in a common Brazilian plant. The team found CBD in the fruit and flowers of a plant known as Trema micantha bloom, which is a shrub that grows in much of South America and is often considered a weed. Molecular biologist Rodrigo Moro Neto of the Federal University of Rio de Janeiro told the news subsidiary. Something to know about that plant is it is part of the family Cannabaceae, which also includes hops, it includes all the cannabis plants, and it includes a number of trees known as citras. And realistically, this is another example of as cannabis science continues to evolve, it's also broadening our knowledge of just general plant science. And I think the biggest reason is that in the past, agriculture was much more heavily devoted to large-scale growth of crops. You weren't really looking at trying to create really high-value, sort of small-scale batches of any product. But in the cannabis industry, that there is a market for that. And I think that, as well, it's also created its own sort of subset of plant science that now can be heavily funded to look into the specific chemical compounds of each individual plant. And as we look at the potential of products like CBD products, which are having huge potential with autism, with a lot of different diseases that affect children, with obviously pain relief, and just as a general health product. There's a lot of money on the table, which means that people are going to look for alternatives that aren't cannabis, because cannabis is heavily regulated and heavily taxed. So if there are alternatives that don't fit into that same category and perhaps don't have THC in them, that can be an insanely profitable venture. So Nito said that chemical analysis has found that Trema contains CBD but not THC, raising the possibility of an abundant new source of CBD, one that would not face the legal and regulatory hurdles of cannabis. It's a legal alternative to using cannabis, he said. This is a plant that grows all over Brazil, and it would be a simpler and a cheaper source of CBD. Now, scientists have also previously found CBD in plants in Thailand as well, and most likely these are going to be other plants that are part of the Cannabisea family. Again, these seem to be plants that obviously do contain at least different amounts of CBD or THC or cannabinoids in them. And I think that as you see these markets expand and more people look into alternatives, they're going to find more alternatives simply because they're looking. And now that there is, again, sort of the funding, hopefully still, within this industry, it allows for more people to look at, again, really what's right in front of us, which is we have weeds growing, potentially, you know, called weeds, growing all around us in different parts of the world that could be medicinally beneficial in lots of different ways and could be a cheap source of medicine as well. And one that, you know, we haven't really looked at. There is always sort of the skeptic look at this, which is to say, you know, it's just going to replicate itself into the farm industry again. That's already what the farm industry does, is look for rare plants and fungus and then commercialize them and patent them and eventually ruin them. This is an issue that's already faced the cannabis industry. This is an issue that's already faced the CBD industry, as again, we've seen lots of different versions of what CBD is and lots of different quality levels and how dramatically that can affect the effectiveness of that product. For instance, if you're getting CBD isolate or if you're getting CBD distillate or if you're getting CBD mixed with other cannabinoids, full spectrum extract, partial spectrum extract, there's a lot of different forms of the same product. And that's really, I think, what is the difficult but also amazing thing about the cannabis industry is that that plant is so versatile and that very minor changes to how the plant is grown or fed nutrients or dried or dealt with at any different stage, including extraction, can dramatically affect how the end product affects the consumer, whether that's medicinally or recreationally. And I think that that's something that makes cannabis somewhat invulnerable to the idea of being too commodified, because there's no escaping the reality that, you know, bud grown with love equals better plants, actually, at the end of the day. And not just from a standard of, oh, this is, you know, sort of consumer preference or the sort of placebo effect of, as you're told the story of how something is grown, it just impacts you in a different way, similarly to how there's that effect in wine. Very similarly to wine, yes, there is that aspect, the mental aspect, but there's also just the reality, which is it's chemically proven. Unfortunately, there's lots of ways to really verify that grapes grown a certain way are a better wine. There's lots of ways to really verify that cannabis grown a certain way produces a more potent and better quality product. And speaking of other weeds that might show potential, if you're not familiar with it, Verbiscum thapsus, also known as mullein, is a member of the snapdragon family and is considered a weed by some and a godsend by others. The plant has been shown to aid in loosening mucus, calming inflammation, and fighting germs. And if you're like me and have been suffering from seasonal allergies and lung irritations, sometimes from smoking bongs, this is something to look into. In health stores, you can find it in capsules and extracts and oils. There's also teas you can get. There's a lot of different ways to get it. But also, if you just start looking at pictures of it, you'll find that it's literally growing all over the place. And can be easily harvested. It can also be easily dried and added to a joint or a bong hit to get some of the same potential benefits as you're dealing with seasonal allergies and dealing with also inflammation, or even just to reduce the coughing from a bong hit or a joint. It actually eases the lungs as you're enjoying your weed. So something to look into as we're looking into all these plants that have, more potential than we've maybe given them, have been treated as weeds, have been treated as something we don't want to deal with. This is another thing to look into, especially if you're a bong or joint smoker. That's all for today's podcast. Have a good rest of your day. That's all for today's podcast. Podcast is now a certified word trademark on the blockchain through Cognate Incorporated CM certification. InvestorIdeas.com podcasts are also available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and TuneIn. If you'd like to be a guest or sponsor of this podcast, please contact InvestorIdeas.com. Investor Ideas reminds all listeners to read our disclaimers and disclosures on the InvestorIdeas.com website, and this podcast is not an endorsement to buy products or services or securities. Investors are reminded that all investments involve risk and possible loss of investment. Investor Ideas does not condone the use of cannabis except where permissible by law. Our site does not possess, distribute, or sell cannabis products.